Isla. Look after the lass.
I'm going with you, growls Becky. Isla darts forward, but Callum meets Becky's determined gaze, sighs, then inclines his head.
Rory,
says Callum.
This way.
Isla's eyes turn to ice when they drop to the collar around my neck, her lips pinch together. Callum doesn't need to tell me twice. Even if I wasn't surrounded by wolves who wanted to kill me, I would follow. Not because of Callum's stupid collar, because of the body in his arms, dripping with blood. I am connected to that boy. I spared his life in the dogfighting ring. I tended to his wounded arm in the kennels. He put me on this path that led to the kingdom of wolves, and it was surely my people, looking for me, that did this to him. He cannot meet his end this way. Slut, Isla mutters as I pass. I bite back a retort, not wanting to add fuel to an already inflammatory situation. I feel the eyes of the surrounding wolves burning into my back as I hurry through the castle entrance. The big oak doors swing shut behind me. I follow the group through the castle. We pass the kitchens, then head down a stairway to a dark room beneath the castle. We must be in the infirmary. There are shelves filled with small jars and pots along the walls, and a workstation littered with books and herbs and glinting metal tools against one wall. There are a couple of cots, and Callum gently places Ryan onto one of them. He kneels down beside him and presses against the wound in his side. Blood spills between his fingers. Ryan's breathing is raspy, each shuddering breath sounding like it could be his last. Callum looks like he's in pain. There's a strange scent in the air, and the walls close in on me as I recognize it. It smells like death. The pain and the grief and the inevitability of what will come hangs like a shroud over us and reminds me too much of those hours I spent with my mother before the end. My heart pounds against my ribs. I don't know what to do. Becky, grasping onto Ryan's hand on the other side of the bed, starts to cry. It's as if she has realized what is going to happen too.
Yarrgh,
curses Callum.
Why isn't he healing? He shouldn't be bleeding this much. Where the fuck is...
The door opens, and Blake enters. Despite the obvious animosity Callum holds for the male, some of the tension seems to leave his shoulders. It's strange. The power seems to shift in the room, too. Even though Callum is the more muscular of the two males, he seems smaller somehow, as Blake stalks forward.
What took you so long?
Says Callum.
Magnus took a little persuading.
Blake kneels beside Callum, and Becky growls as he lifts up one of Ryan's closed eyelids.
Make that noise at me again, and I'll rip out your tongue.
Becky looks as if she's about to launch herself over the cot at him, but Callum raises a blood-slicked hand.
It's all right, Becky,
he says.
Blake's our healer here at Castle Madach Ali.
I distinctly recall Callum referring to the castle's healer in a derogatory manner on the way here. Now I know why. Blake is not what I expected of a healer. He is nothing like the fusty old men who worked for the High Priest, and did little to ease my mother's suffering. I watch as he unbuttons the cuffs of his sleeves, then rolls them up, revealing corded forearms, and a nasty scar just beneath his elbow. What's wrong with him? I ask, thinking back to that horrible book of experiments I found in my chambers. I thought wolves healed quickly. Candles flicker in the infirmary, and the light dances across Blake's chiseled features.
Come on, you know the answer to that, little rabbit.
Why should I? Blake clucks his tongue.
So, you've wandered into a den of wolves with no idea what weakens us. That's not very smart, is it?
Now's not the time, Blake,
growls Callum.
I expect stupidity from him,
Blake continues.
You? No. Small and fragile things cannot afford to be stupid. They're too easy to break.
If Callum didn't have both his hands pressing into Ryan's side, I think he would have broken Blake. He suddenly looks like he wants to. His jawline is hard. Yet, oddly, beneath the thinly veiled threat, It feels almost as if Blake is trying to give me a piece of advice. His eyes are glinting, as if he's challenging me to find the answer. I think back to that book again. There was an experiment that declared a substance that affected a wolf's ability to heal, and in large doses, was deadly. Dread fills me. Wolfsbane, I say.
Good girl, says Blake.
Chapter 26. Wolfsbane. The air is sucked out of the infirmary. Callum tenses, and a cry tears from Becky's lips. In the book I read, it didn't seem like there was a cure.
Can you fix him?
The plea in Callum's voice breaks something inside me.
Perhaps.
Blake walks over to his workstation and selects a pipette. He takes a sample of Ryan's blood and holds it up to the torch flickering on the wall. What are you doing? I ask.
Identifying the strain.
Callum's gaze seeks mine. I can see he is lost, floating away, and looking for something to hold on to. Even though we barely know each other, he wants it to be me. I know that feeling. I felt like I was drowning when my mother was dying. I wanted to grab onto someone, anyone. My father, my brother, the ladies in waiting, so that my head would remain above the water. Only, they always remained out of reach. I will not remain out of Callum's reach. My gaze flits back to Blake. Can he be cured?
There's only one person in the Northlands who knows the antidote, says Blake.
You? His lips curve into a smile. He goes back to the workstation and starts mixing something in a beaker.
Keep pressure on the wound,
he tells Callum. When Blake returns, he tips back Ryan's head and pours the liquid into his mouth. Ryan chokes. I step closer, peering over Becky's head. That's the antidote.
Yes.
What is it made of?
If I told you, I'd have to kill you.
His tone is light, but I have the distinct feeling that this is not an empty threat.
Keep hold of him.
I am holding him,
growls Callum.
Fix him.
How does it work? I ask. Ryan's eyes jolt open. His back arches off the cot, and his shoulders bend in an unnatural way. He screams. Blake clamps his hand over Ryan's mouth, forcing him to swallow the liquid that he's trying to spit out.
Is that necessary?
Snaps Callum. Get off him! Shrieks Becky. You're hurting him! Stop it! I watch the gash in Ryan's side, fascinated. The blood loss is slowing. Blake is hurting him, yes. But he's fixing him too. Becky doesn't see it, though. She throws herself at Blake. With his free hand, he grabs her arm.
Take her outside,
he says. Callum looks at me, and I see the question in him, the plea. Come on, Becky. I gently touch her shoulder. Let's...
No, the rabbit stays.
Blake glances at Callum.
You take her.
Callum's posture straightens.
If you think for a moment that I'm leaving her alone with you...
Do you want me to fix him?
Callum swallows.
Aye, but...
He winces when Ryan lets out a blood-curdling scream.
Then take the girl outside and leave your pet, says Blake. She is of more use to me than you.
I bristle at being called a pet, but he's right... I can help. Callum is too emotional. Whatever fight Ryan has ahead of him, it is clearly going to be painful, and Callum looks as if he wants to take the pain away. The easiest way for him to do that would be to get rid of Blake. Yet Blake seems to actually know what he is doing. He is fixing him in a way that no one was ever able to do for my mother. It's okay, Callum, I say gently. You should take Becky outside. I know Callum will not be happy to leave me, or Ryan, so I search for a way to make him feel like he is in control of the situation. Someone needs to find out what happened, I say. Others could be in danger. You should go with Becky and speak to Fergus. Callum takes a deep, shuddering breath.
You sure?
Yes. Blake puts his hand on Ryan's wound when Callum gets up. Callum's eyes narrow on him.
If you touch her...
Yes, yes. You'll kill me in an undoubtedly unimaginative way. Don't worry. I don't harm things that are useful to me.
Callum's warmth floods me as he touches my shoulder and squeezes lightly. I'll be fine, I say. He takes Becky's arm and leads her, sobbing, away.
If you need me, I'll hear you.
I know. They head out of the room, and he closes the door behind them.
Others could be in danger.
Blake rolls his eyes.
You're a manipulative little thing, aren't you?
I glare at Blake. I do not like being called that. I wasn't being manipulative. I was trying to help. I got him to leave, didn't I? Blake smirks.
Get a needle and thread from my case on the workstation, and the pot of white ointment.
I hurry over. The pot sits amid an array of glass jars, pestles, and dried herbs. I grab it, then flip open his case. There's a cold metal scalpels in there, alongside the items he's asking for. When I have them, I kneel by his side.
Put the ointment on the wound.
What is it? I twist off the lid. It smells sharp, like alcohol. When I smear it onto the gash in Ryan's side, he shrieks. Blake grabs his shoulders and pins him down.
It's to kill the bacteria. Wolves heal fast, but wounds can still get infected. Now, sew it up.
Sew it up?
Yes. Imagine you're sewing a dress.
I look at him. Was he listening in on mine and Callum's conversation? He nods at the wound.
Go on.
I grab the needle and thread. And shaking slightly, I hover above the wound. I am by no means queasy when it comes to blood and wounds, but this is something I haven't done before. Blake leans over me, and I catch the scent of dark forests as he pinches the flesh on both sides of the wound together. He takes the needle from me.
Like this.
He punctures the skin with the needle, and Ryan shrieks again as he pulls the thread through.
Then create a knot, like this.
He hands the needle back to me. I mimic Blake's movements as I pull the needle through his flesh.
Wolfsbane is an intriguing poison,
says Blake.
It attacks the wolf inside us, stops us from healing, lowers our temperature, drains our strength.
With each pull of the needle, the wound gets smaller, and I feel more satisfied. My hand is no longer shaking by the time that I'm done. How does the antidote work?
It forces the wolf to fight back.
He points at the thread.
Now pull here. Tighten it. There. Good. Now, cut the thread.
He passes me some scissors, and I do so. How did you discover the antidote? I ask. He walks over to his workstation and wipes his hands on a rag.
You don't want to know.
I focus on Ryan. He's already less pale, and his breathing is steadier. Will he be okay?
That depends.
On?
The strength of the wolf.
When Ryan faced Callum in the fighting ring, he was courageous. He faced his fate with strength and dignity. He's strong.
Not particularly.
Blake drops the now bloody rag and smirks when I glare at him.
It was a weak strain of wolfsbane. He'll recover.
I breathe out slowly. It's like a weight is lifted from my chest. I don't fight the smile that spreads across my face. Blake looks at me curiously, and his gaze flits lazily to the door.
You seem to be in some pain yourself, little rabbit,
he says.
Muscular pain from your journey here, I presume. If you come to my chambers tonight, I have just the thing to help.
Callum strides back into the room.
He's in recovery,
says Blake, before Callum can speak.
You can take him to his chambers if you...
Blake's gaze narrows on Ryan, and he snatches something from the boy's pocket.
What's that?
Callum holds out his hand. Blake turns over a bloody envelope. Instead of giving it to Callum, he passes it to me. I frown. Aurora is written in elegant calligraphy across the front. Heart beating fast, I turn it over. The wax seal has a star in its center, the sigil of the borderlands. My skin turns cold as I rip it open and read. A present for you, my love. Think of the boy as a betrothal gift. I know you are fond of him from our time at the dogfight. I'll be seeing you soon. Yours, Sebastian. Chapter 27. Ryan's chambers are warm and quiet. A fire crackles in the hearth, casting light onto Callum's face as he sits in the wooden chair beside it. He's changed out of his blood-soaked clothes, as have I, and he's bathed. His hair is damp and brushed back from his face. He looks younger and more boyish when he's clean. Becky snoozes in a chair next to the bed, and Ryan breathes softly as he sleeps. Alongside my relief at his recovery, a swell of satisfaction blooms in my chest. He is going to be okay, and I helped. Still, a dark shadow hangs over me. What are we going to do about Sebastian? I ask.
Don't worry about that.
Not all of your people have returned. He hurt Ryan because of me, and if he has more of your men... Callum runs a hand over his mouth.
It's not your fault. We'll get him back for this, I promise you.
Something twists in my gut. Now, more than ever, I do not want to go back to Sebastian. And, after spending time with Callum, my initial plan of giving my father information about the Wolf King is getting less appealing. Yet if I stay, people will be tortured and die because of me. I'm not sure if I can stomach it. I should go back, I say.
No.
Callum's eyes blaze into mine. You're going to trade me for the Heart of the Moon anyway. Why not do it now?
No.
This time, his tone is final.
We'll find another way.
I'm not sure how much longer we sit there, but it feels late by the time that Callum walks me back to my chambers.
Thank you for earlier,
he says.
What you did for Ryan, I appreciate it.
It was nothing, I say, embarrassed by the emotion blazing in his eyes.
No, it wasn't.
Callum follows me into my room. Someone has been here in my absence and lit the candles on the desk and the bedside table. They emit a soft glow and flick shadows over the books and the small bed. They do nothing to fight the cold, though. My breath plumes in front of my face. It has been a long day, and the adrenaline that was pumping through my body earlier has desisted, leaving me with aching limbs and heavy eyelids.
Let me help,
says Callum. What? He stands awkwardly beside the bookshelf. His height and broad shoulders seem too big for the small room. His head almost touches the ceiling. When he drags his teeth over his bottom lip, an uncharacteristic vulnerability flashes behind his eyes.
Blake said you were still aching, and the way you were walking up the stairs.
It's unsettling that you know these things, you know. He offers me a lopsided grin.
Aye, not much is private around here. Imagine being a young pup up to no good, and your mother being able to hear your racing pulse as you lie to her about your whereabouts.
Were you often up to no good?
Oh, always.
I let loose a soft laugh, and his eyes brighten. I shift from one foot to the other, suddenly very aware that we are alone in my chambers after nightfall. I swallow. It's not bad, the aching. Blake said if I went to his chambers, he would give me something for the pain. Callum's expression darkens.
Blake was trying to provoke me. I doubt he has anything that could help. The wolf inside us fights off most pain relief. And if he did have something, it'd be in the infirmary, not his bed chambers.
A sheepish look crosses his face.
But I can help you, if you'd like.
How? He nods at the bed.
Lie down, on your front.
I will do no such thing. He laughs softly.
I mean no harm, princess. Nothing improper, I swear it. I promised you no one would touch you, And that extends to me.
I eye him suspiciously. Well, what are you going to do?
Just massage some of the tension out of your muscles.
That seems like you'd be touching me.
Aye, I know. But it's not, I mean, it's not like I'd be...
He shakes his head.
Yalach, you've got me tongue-tied.
He looks down at his feet. When he runs his hand over the back of his neck, there's a ghost of a smile on his lips.
What I mean to say, Princess, is that I'm offering a massage purely for its medicinal properties, just as a healer might offer a soldier treatment after battle. If you want it, that is.
He shifts his weight from one foot to another. If I didn't know better, I'd think this arrogant, powerful alpha was nervous. I suppress my smile. Why does that give me so much satisfaction? I glance at his hands by his sides, and my amusement disappears as I imagine them on me. They're so big and strong. I can't help but wonder what they would feel like. It would be wrong for me to let him touch me like that. I'm not supposed to let anyone touch me. But it's not as if anyone would ever know. And if it's for medicinal purposes... Heart racing, I lie down on my front on the bed. Okay, I whisper. He sucks in a deep breath before approaching. The mattress dips as he sits down beside me, and a wave of his heat washes over me. He smells like the outdoors and the mountains. Tentatively, he brushes my hair off my neck, and I tense. He unfastens the collar and places it on the bedside table.
You don't need to wear that when it's just us,
he says. Fiona said you don't like it, as a tradition.
No, I don't.
He puts his hands on my shoulders, and all my nerves come alive. His skin is hot, and his fingers are strong as he kneads my muscles. I breathe out slowly, my body softening under his touch. Why? I whisper. His hands move down, and his palms stretch across my back and make me feel tiny in comparison to him.
My father was a difficult male.
His fingers are on either side of my waist as he runs his thumbs in gentle circles down my spine. I have to suppress a moan.
He was the Alpha of Hyphel before me, and he believed that leadership was all about dominance and bending others to your will. If you're not a wolf, you're a sheep, he would say. He did not treat his people well, nor did he treat my mother well.
His hands move back up to my shoulders.
He was possessive, jealous, angry. When he'd lose his temper, he'd say it was the wolf that made him do it. It wasn't. It was him.
He swallows.
I don't want to be like him. I wanted to be Alpha to look after my people, to protect them, not to dominate them. But I feel it sometimes, that flicker of anger or that twinge of jealousy. I wanted to hurt Blake earlier when he invited you to his chambers.
He laughs darkly.
When does protectiveness become possessiveness? Can you even be an Alpha if a part of you doesn't like to be in charge?
He runs his thumb over the back of my neck, leaving a trail of heat in his wake. I fight back a whimper.
The collar, it's a symbol of dominance, and I don't like it. When I'm with a female, I want it to be because we are equal. I do not want to become my father. I do not want my people to think that is who I am. And I don't want you to think that's who I am, Princess.
He trails his hands over my upper arms and sighs.
So no, I do not like you wearing that thing. It is a reminder of everything I do not want to be.
What do you want to be? He pauses, and for a moment, all I can hear is his breathing and the soft flicker of the candle by the bed.
A good man.
I swallow. I think you're a good man. I probably shouldn't think that about a wolf who stole me from my bed. But I do. I have met monsters, and Callum is not one of them.
That means a lot, Princess.
Callum's voice is rough, and I know he's being sincere.
It really does.
Candlelight casts shadows across the wall beside me, and despite the heaviness of the conversation, my body is weightless beneath Callum's hands. He moves them over my shoulders, kneading and pressing his fingers into my aching muscles.
Is this okay?
He asks. Yes! My blood is heating in my veins. Even though the chambers are cold, I'm hot. He may be relieving tension from my muscles, but it seems to be building up in a different way. I want more. I want him harder, firmer, lower. My breathing quickens. There's another ache building between my legs. As his fingers lightly brush my waist, all the heat in my body seems to pull at my core. Callum stills. Cold disappointment floods me. What's the matter? I glance over my shoulder. Panic surges through my body when my gaze lands on Callum's face. I scramble forward, reaching for the silver letter opener on my bedside table as I push my back against the headboard. Every muscle in Callum's body is tense. He shuts his eyes, but not before I see what is behind his eyelids. His pupils are dilated. His irises are a different shape and brighter somehow. They are not Callum's eyes. They are not the eyes of a man. They have changed. They are the eyes of a wolf. Chapter 28. My grip on the silver letter opener is so tight that my knuckles are white. The door is maybe a 10-foot dash from where I am, but I don't think I can make it. Every story I've ever heard about wolves crashes through my mind. Stories about torn flesh, massacred villages, blood and gore and murder. At some point since I was taken, I let myself forget the cold, hard truth. This male can turn into a wolf. Callum is breathing heavily, and his hands grip the bedsheets on either side of him.
It's okay.
His voice is as rough as gravel.
You're safe.
Your eyes.
I know.
My breathing is fast, and my hand trembles as I brandish the ridiculously small weapon in front of me. Are you going to turn into a wolf? His jaw clenches.
No, I can't. Only on a full moon.
I glance at the window. The candlelight is reflected in the glass. Beyond it, the mountains hide the shape of the moon.
It's not a full moon,
he says, a hint of amusement in his tone, as if he knows I'm checking. But I saw your eyes. He lets out a shaky breath.
That happens sometimes, when I get a bit emotional. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to frighten you.
I exhale. You're not going to change.
No, you're perfectly safe.
I frown. Are you sure? He laughs, though it sounds a little forced.
I'm sure.
My toes uncurl from the bedsheets. I move a little closer to him, and he tenses. The floorboards creak as I slip off the bed. Warily, I approach. He shifts his body in tandem with my movements, so that he's facing me, his thighs slightly parting as I step between them. My legs brush against his kilt. His broad chest moves up and down deeply. He smells like the outdoors, like the Northland's winds have clung to his skin and his clothing. But there's heat beneath it, like spice and wood smoke. And he's warm, so warm. How can a male radiate such heat? His face tilts up, and candlelight flickers across his closed eyelids. The movement exposes his throat to me, and I hold the silver blade between us. I take a shaky breath. I want to see. Slowly, he opens his eyes. My breath catches in my throat. His irises have expanded and changed shape. They're still green, but brighter, and within them there are flecks of yellow and gold. His pupils are dilated, and they're as black as the depths of the forest at night. They are wolf's eyes. They are fascinating. I have heard many stories about wolves, but they all depict their brutality and lack of mercy when they raid our villages. I didn't know their eyes could change when they look like men, nor look so beautiful. I touch his cheek. The muscles in his forearms flex as his grip on the mattress tightens. It happens when you're emotional, I ask. What emotion are you feeling?
The same emotion as you, Princess.
I'm not feeling anything. He smiles softly.
You might be able to hide your emotions from Southerners, Princess. You forget that I'm a wolf. I can sense things. Your heartbeat. Your scent.
He swallows hard.
It changes.
My fingers inch down the side of his face, touching his rough stubble. Don't smell me. He laughs and it sounds like a growl.
I can't help it.
I'm not feeling anything.
Okay.
His eyes don't move from mine. They are wary and alert, but there's something almost vulnerable dancing around those flecks of gold. The air feels thick and heady and strange, static almost, and tension coils in my lower stomach. Despite the chill in the room, I am hot. I have a male in my chambers after nightfall, even though I am betrothed to another. He's an alpha of an enemy kingdom. He's plotting against my father. I know everything about this is wrong. But when his hands shift on the bedsheets, I want him to place them on my hips. His gaze dips to my mouth, and I forget how to breathe. I want to brush my lips against his. I want to know what it's like to kiss a man. Would Callum be soft and gentle, or hard and claiming? The latter would have scared me a week ago. Now, it heats my blood. He closes his eyes and takes a deep breath. When he opens them again, he averts his gaze to the floorboards between our feet. My hand drops to my side.
It's getting late.
Callum clears his throat. He stands, and I have to step back.
I should go.
Disappointment carves a hole in my chest. I thought you were going to stop my arms and legs from aching. He gives me a soft smile.
I think you'll want me to ease a different ache, Princess. And while under different circumstances, I'd be happy to oblige, under these circumstances, it wouldn't be right.
My cheeks flame. That's not... How dare you suggest... I'm the Princess of the Southlands! It is strange that even though his eyes look like wolf eyes, I can see the glimmer of amusement in them.
Nonetheless, I don't trust myself right now.
He bows his head.
Good night, Princess.
Yes, good. You should go, I say, raising my chin, pretending it was I who dismissed him. It is late. Good night, Callum. He releases a shuddery breath as he exits my chambers. Part of me wants to chase after Callum, and another wants to keep the door closed and never let him back inside again. After dropping the letter opener on my bedside table, I sit on my bed and put my head in my hands. I don't know what is wrong with me. I feel like I am playing with fire, and there's a small dark part of me that wants to get burned. Later, when I'm in my nightgown and settling down to sleep, I tell myself it was all just a lapse in judgment. I've had a long day, and the adrenaline made me want things I have never wanted before. That's all. I didn't really want to kiss him. I didn't really want him to touch me. That would be wrong. I am an unmarried woman, and that would go against everything I have been taught to believe. It would take me even further away from my duty to my kingdom. But it occurs to me, in the dark of night, that if Callum did touch me, Sebastian would not want me anymore. I close my eyes, pushing down the dark thoughts this revelation has created. When I finally fall asleep, I dream of Callum's mouth on my skin, his rough hands on my body, his strong arms holding me close to him. And then I dream of unfamiliar wolf eyes watching me from deep within the forest. Chapter 29.
You look frustrated this morning, Callum,
says Blake at breakfast the next day. He saunters over to the alpha table and seats himself beside the acting wolf king.
Aye, that he does,
says Robert, not bothering to lower his voice.
Something to do with the Southern last, you reckon? I wouldn't be going around looking like I had a stick up my arse if she was wearing my collar.
He goes on to describe the horrible things he would do to me to relieve his frustration, much to my disgust, while two other wolves roar with laughter. Beside me, Callum's jaw sets.
What do you reckon, Blake?
Asks Robert, realizing that Blake doesn't seem to be listening. The dark-haired wolf is sitting with one arm slung over his chair, seemingly staring at the tapestries that depict different stages of the moon hanging from the walls. Lazily, he turns his head.
About what? The lass?
I feel Blake's eyes on me, just for a moment, even though I'm staring down at my porridge. My fist tightens around my spoon.
She's adequate, I suppose,
he replies. I look up just as he grabs an apple and saunters out of the great hall. Robert laughs as he continues his disgusting monologue about me. Rage builds inside my chest. I wonder if he'd be so amused if I slipped some wolfsbane in his tea. Callum puts a hand on my leg, and I start.
I'll kill him for you, if you like,
he says. His voice is quiet, but the air feels charged for a moment. A furrow appears in Robert's brow, so I know he heard him, and Callum smiles at him, threateningly. Robert turns away and rejoins the conversation the other men are now having about Blake.
Does Blake even like the lasses? I think so. I've heard some screams coming from his room late at night. Aye, but they're not the good kind. I've heard he has some dark tastes. Never wanted to ask.
I turn back to Callum. Would you really kill him for me? I ask.
Aye. I hope you don't ask, because it could cause me some serious problems when the king returns.
I smile as I go back to my porridge. I'm less amused when Robert looms over our table 20 minutes later.
I said you could keep her if she earned her keep,
he says. He walks off before Callum can respond. I could get a job in the infirmary, I say. I don't want to do anything to appease that horrible wolf, but I must admit, I'm curious. I wonder what I could learn about healing and wolves if I had the opportunity to do so. I don't mind. I have nothing else to do while we wait for your king to return, so I may as well make myself useful. Callum's eyebrows raise, then he shakes his head.
No, I appreciate what you did for Ryan, but I don't want you alone with Blake.
He gives me an assessing look.
If you truly want a way to pass the time, I may have an idea.
What is it?
Our cook, Mrs. MacDonald, is always complaining that she needs help peeling potatoes in the kitchens.
The past week, a restless energy has been growing within the castle. The wolves are angry about the attack against Ryan, but there's more to it than that. It feels like the days before a big storm, where the air is close and humid. It feels like something big is about to happen. I see less of Callum during the week than I did in my first few days here. It is partially because I'm spending my time in the kitchens. When I first arrived here, someone made a comment about the cook, Mrs. MacDonald, being like a dragon, and they were not wrong. She is truly a formidable woman, with graying hair and a sharp tongue. She is constantly shouting at me. Her hatred doesn't come from the fact that I am human, rather that I am incompetent in the kitchen. I have no idea how to make a stew, I burn the bread, and I'm constantly knocking things over. I have never had to do these things before. People always served me my meals, so it's no wonder I'm useless. I have a feeling that even if Mrs. MacDonald knew I was a princess, she would not sympathize. I don't like being constantly scolded, For the first few days, it was difficult to bite my tongue. But there's actually something refreshing about someone being unguarded around me, not fearing that I'll have them executed if they speak to me in a way I do not like. It makes me feel normal. The other plus side of being so useless is that after a few days, the kitchen maid Kaylee, who snarled at me for making her drop her potatoes on that first day here, starts to take pity on me, even if she is still cold. She begrudgingly shows me how to dice an onion, and grumpily walks me around the kitchen gardens one day to show me the different herbs. On the fifth day, when she cuts herself, I offer to take her to the infirmary, and she blanches, clearly terrified of the dark-haired wolf who occupies it. I help her clean it so it doesn't become infected. After that, she's a lot more pleasant, and even starts to gossip with me.
"What's Callum like in the sack, then?" she asks one day.
"In the sack?
You know, in bed."
I flush, remembering people are supposed to think I have been intimate with him.
"Kaylee,
can we change the subject, please?" She giggles.
"You Southerners are so shy. I bet he's good. I'd be shouting about it from the rooftops if I had a male like that in my bed."
Callum hasn't been anywhere near my bed again since he massaged me, though. He tells me he is busy. He's trying to stop the wolves from attacking Sebastian in retaliation for what he did to Ryan. Their best move, he says, is to wait until the return of the Wolf King, when he can put his plan into play and get hold of the Heart of the Moon. But there is more to it than that. Even though he has spent time with me every day, eating dinner with me in the Great Hall and teasing me about Mrs. MacDonald, he is more guarded around me. He's suddenly been less physical and seems to avoid touching me. I should be glad about that. Yet I'm worried I have offended him in some way, or perhaps he has just lost interest in me. I ask Fiona about him one day, when she shows me the stables on my lunch break.
"Don't take it personally," she says.
"As the full moon gets closer, the wolf gets stronger. It brings certain animalistic traits to the surface."
"Like what?"
"Like the need to hunt, to kill, to fuck."
My eyes widen and I splutter, "Goodness!" She laughs and gives me a half shrug.
"All I'm saying is, he's trying to suppress the wolf around you, that's all."
There is an irony, I suppose, that for so many years I tried to suppress my emotions, and now Callum is doing the same. I think of that recurring dream I had, where I was a statue in the palace grounds. I haven't had that dream since I came here. In fact, I no longer feel like stone at all. I feel as if I'm finally waking up. As the days pass, a restlessness grows inside me. It's wild and dark and aching. It is as if my soul is responding to the crackle of energy that pulses through the castle as the full moon approaches, and I feel alive. The day of the full moon, I'm dismissed from the kitchens early. Apparently, the wolves fast during the day and hunt during the night, so there is no work to be done. It is raining, so I spend my day reading. I find myself thinking about my mother's symptoms and searching for answers within the countless medical tomes within these chambers. I wasn't allowed access to such books at the palace. They were reserved only for the healers and the educated men. And I wonder if I may finally find my answers here. I'm distracted, though. My skin itches, and every time I see the word wolf on the page, I think of Callum's eyes. Every time I shift position on the bed, I think about how he massaged me. Every time I catch the smell of wood smoke drifting from one of the rooms below, I'm reminded of his scent. Twilight arrives, and my room is painted in grey shadow. I'm reading about how a wolf bite can activate the wolf gene in a half-wolf when someone knocks on the door. I drop the book. I expect Callum to walk into my room, but instead, Fiona enters balancing a tray laden with bread and cheese and a fresh jug of water. Disappointment swells within me. Is Callum not going to visit me tonight? I thought he would. Fiona arches an eyebrow as she sets down the tray, as if she knows what I'm thinking.
"He sent me to tell you to stay in your room," she says. "He says you're not to come out for any reason."
She's even scruffier than usual. Her shirt is untucked, and her dark hair is loose down her shoulders. I catch the scent of alcohol on her breath, and her cheeks are rosy. Where is he? There is a ritual on the night of a full moon, out in the forest. We're all expected to be there to welcome the moon goddess, the Alphas especially. She leans back against the writing desk. Callum's there already. I try not to feel hurt. I try not to feel anything. It shouldn't bother me that he is having a good time without me. Why should he give me a second thought? I'm just the bargaining chip that he will use to get his heart of the moon. It's just, I'd started to think. I'm not sure what I thought. It was a silly fantasy, I suppose, that the powerful Alpha of the Highfell clan could fall for the spoiled Southlands princess. I'm betrothed to another anyway. Callum has always intended to give me back to him, and I have always intended to give my father information about the wolves, so I might escape my fate with Sebastian. How could anything ever happen between us? I try not to think about the crude things Fiona said, about what the full moon makes wolves want to do. If Callum wants to enjoy himself, then that is his right, and there are certainly plenty of females who would happily enjoy him. Something dark and ugly twists in my chest. What do you do at the ritual? We drink and dance and cut loose. Her eyes are bright. Then the moon rises and we shift. She pushes off from the desk and heads to the door. No one will bother you tonight. We'll all be hunting in the forest. Stay in the castle. She nods at the letter opener on my bedside table. Keep that close, too. She leaves me to join Callum and the others. As the room darkens, so do my thoughts. The old me, the one who existed before I was taken, would have accepted that someone as important as Callum would not visit me before an important event. When I was left at home while my brother went hunting, or when I was sent to bed by my father at feasts so the men could talk, I accepted this without question. But something is changing within me, shifting and transforming. I deserved a visit from him, didn't I? The shadows grow, and in the distance, I can hear men shouting. I wonder if Callum's is among them. I try not to think about what he might be doing, and who he might be doing it with. I'm sure Isla will be all over him tonight. Before long, a ghostly glow fills my chambers, and curiosity pulls me to the window. The full moon is high in the sky. I have never seen it so bright before. It paints the evergreens in ashy silver. As I'm staring, time seems to stand still. Silence sweeps over the land. The wind drops, and the loch is deathly quiet. A howl breaks the night, followed by hundreds more. My arms turn into goose flesh, and the hairs on the back of my neck stand on end. The wolves have shifted. I'm peering through the glass, wondering if I'll see any of them, when I hear a roar of pain. It's distinctly human, and sounds like it's coming from within the castle. I breathe in sharply. Has Ryan woken up? Wolfsbane attacks the wolf. I've been reading about it all week. I wonder if he is unable to shift. I move my weight from one foot to the other. I want to go to him, but I was told to stay in my room. He screams again, and I cannot bear it. He is hurt because of me, because Sebastian wants me back and sent him with a message. My mother's voice comes to me, just as it did on the night when I went to the kennels to tend to his injuries. Have courage, little one. I have to do something. I pull on my cloak and boots, pocket the silver letter opener, and hurry out of the door. The castle is eerily quiet, and I can barely see where I'm going as I feel my way down the spiral staircase. I reach one of the landings. The male cries out again, and I follow the sound down a sconce-lined corridor. There's a loud clatter ahead, followed by a low grunt. It's coming from one of the rooms. Heart in my throat, I push open the door. The room is dark, but I can see I'm in someone's bedchambers. A regal four-poster bed with black silk bedding dominates the space. An oil lamp is shattered on the floor, and shards of glass glint on the sheepskin rug. Rai! The young wolf's name dies in my mouth. There's a male in the room, but it isn't Ryan. He's facing away from me, so all I can see is a muscular back, a silver web of angry scars crisscrossing his skin. He's leaning against a desk, and he's breathing hard. He's wearing nothing but a pair of breeches. Blake, I whisper. I don't understand. He should be a wolf.
What are you doing here, little rabbit?
His voice sounds strange, as dark and smooth as the night sky outside the window. Slowly, he turns around. He's covered in a thin sheen of sweat, and a couple of dark strands of hair stick to his forehead. There are scars on his torso, too, but my gaze is held by the strange look on his face. I step back, my hand reaching for the knife in my pocket. Blake, I thought you were... Why aren't you... What are you doing? His nostrils flare. He breathes in, then sighs, his head tilting back. The tension in his muscles dissipates.
Fuck it.
When he meets my gaze again, the wolf is in his eyes. A cold smile spreads across his face.
Run, he says.
Chapter 30. Run. Although my heartbeat skitters in my chest, I turn to stone. My feet grow roots, and I cannot move. I can only stare in horror, unblinking at Blake. The ghostly glow from the full moon reflects off his damp skin. He stalks toward me.
Run.
His voice is different, low and raspy. The air is charged. It feels like lightning is about to strike. And then he changes. It only takes a few seconds, but every bone in his body breaks and shifts. And what is left in his place? Time stops. He is as large as a wild bear. His fur is black, making him at one with the shadows. His eyes, amber, glow in the darkness. He bares his teeth and growls. Adrenaline surges through my body, cracking the stone and uprooting my feet. Run! My brain screams. Just as the beast leaps, I turn. I bolt out of the room. I knock my shoulder against the doorframe as I escape, veering into the opposite stone wall, then stumbling into the center of the corridor. There's a crash behind me, a gnashing of teeth. My feet pound against the stone floor, propelling me forward. I do not know where I'm going. The night is dark, the corridors and stairways unfamiliar. Again, I am alone in a labyrinth of stone and shadow, and the beast is getting closer. One word repeats in my mind over and over again as the sound of my heartbeat rages in my ears. Run, run, run! His claws scrape and clack against the flagstones. There's a smash as he barges into a wall, knocking an unlit sconce from its holder. His growl vibrates through my chest. Faster, faster, faster! I reach a stairway. The wolf crashes in front of me, skidding over the stone. I change course, and he blocks me again with his teeth bared. His heat swamps me as I veer in the opposite direction. He is leading me further into the maze, herding me like the dogs on the farms do with the sheep before they are slaughtered. Goddess, help me! The walls close in as I sprint past them. My hair sticks to my face, and my body is drenched in sweat. My cloak constricts me. The air is hot, claustrophobic. I need to get out of here. I need to feel the wind and taste the mountains. I need the freshness of the rain to touch my face, and I need to see the infinite sky, even if it is not my goddess that lights it tonight. I don't want to be herded into my own tomb. I will not die tonight. Something inside me screams, fight, fight, fight! I hurl the silver letter opener over my shoulder. I don't wait to see if I hit my target. Though he is so big, surely I cannot miss. A crash, then an aggressive growl fills my ears. I don't pause. I wrench a large oil painting off the wall as I pass, partially blocking the path. Ahead, there is the stairway that Callum carried me up when I arrived at the castle. I almost fall in my haste to get down it, regaining my balance only when I reach the bottom. Then I'm in the entrance hall, and the wolf is behind me. But the doors are open, and the night is ahead. The wind rattles the walls, and it speaks to me. Come, come, come. My muscles screaming, I hurtle out into the deserted courtyard, then beyond the castle walls into the open wilderness. The air has never tasted so fresh, and yet I am not safe. Not yet. Heavy paws stir the wet earth behind me, and a growl is carried on the wind. On one side of me is the loch, silver in the light of the moon. On the other, there is nothing but open space and the steep incline of the hill that Callum and I rode down when we arrived here. I run in the other direction, past the castle and toward the thousands of evergreen trees whispering to me, "Hide, hide, hide." The wind blows my hair from my face. The air shifts as I enter the forest. It gets damper and darker. The smell of bark and heather floods my senses. Pine needles and twigs crunch beneath my boots. A crash resounds behind me as the wolf, as Blake, leaps into one of the trees, using it to propel him into my path. I change course, weaving through the tall trunks, barely feeling the branches that scratch my face. And I'm aware he is hurting me again. He keeps jumping in front of me, teeth gnashing, as he dismembers trees and scatters the undergrowth. I keep having to change course, desperate to escape his fierce jaws. He knows this forest. He knows something I do not. I find out what it is when I burst into a clearing. A fast-moving river cuts the path ahead, crashing against the rocks and weaving to the right. I veer left, but there is a thicket of thorns so thick there is no way through. No! A low, threatening sound fills the clearing. I turn. Neon amber eyes flash in the gloom between the trees. The wolf stalks forward. Blake, I say breathless, edging back even as the river crashes behind me. You don't want to do this. I do not want to beg. I do not want to die. Blake, please. He pauses, tilting his head to the side. You know who I am. I gulp down the thick air. This is a mistake. His eyes glint. Intelligence radiates from him, even in his wolf form. I don't know if he understands me. I don't know if I could persuade him even if he did. What about the heart of the moon? I try to reason with him. If you kill me, you won't get it. He looks up at the sky between the branches and howls. It is long and mournful, and it raises the hairs on the back of my neck. If you hurt me, Callum will kill you. The way his mouth moves, it almost looks like he is grinning. Dread fills me. Perhaps provoking Callum is the whole point. He snarls, and the noise is primal. There is no way to reason with him. I veer to the side, but it is too late. He crashes into my chest, and my back hits the undergrowth. The air is knocked from my lungs. I push and struggle against him, my hands sinking into fur, my head tilting away from gnashing teeth. He is crushing me, immeasurably heavy and strong. I kick one of his legs and he growls. Get off me! I screech. My fingers fumble in the dirt, my heart leaping when they close around a rock. I smack him in the head with it, turning and crawling from beneath him. He bites the collar of my cloak and drags me back, turning me over with his paws so I'm forced to look up at him. His eyes glint, a predator pleased he has caught his prey. He licks my face, as if taunting me, his tongue hot and rough and disgusting. My skin crawls, but I do not have enough air in my lungs to scream. When he bares his teeth, I know I'm dead. The river crashes behind me. The wind stirs the branches above. Fight, it seems to say. Fight, fight, fight. I bare my teeth back, feeling something feral and wild knock loose inside me. His lip curls above his teeth, and then a lower, more threatening growl rumbles through the forest. It stirs the trees and shakes the earth. Blake's ears prick up. I cannot see beyond him. but something is approaching. From Blake's reaction, it must be something even worse than he is. Blake turns. I gulp in the sweet taste of the night as I scramble from beneath him, dragging myself closer to the river. Another wolf prowls into the clearing. He is huge, with tawny fur and bared teeth. The ground seems to shudder as he approaches. Fear grips my heart and squeezes. Fiona's warning to stay inside the castle tonight resounds in my mind. The wolf's gaze locks onto mine. His eyes are green, with flecks of golden yellow. Callum, I breathe. He growls, his gaze moving back to Blake. Chapter 31. The two wolves stare at one another across the clearing. The air is charged. It's as if the forest itself is holding its breath, watching, waiting. All I can hear is my pounding heart and the whispering leaves as they rustle in the breeze. Fight, they seem to be saying. Fight, fight, fight. A growl builds behind the bared teeth of the bigger wolf, Callum. It is so low that I feel it vibrating through my bones. The shadows seem to cower from him. Callum would be a terrifying opponent as a man, tall and broad with muscles that look like they're carved from rock. Now, he looks as feral as he is strong. His teeth are sharp enough to tear through flesh, and his paws send shivers through the ground. His eyes, they glow with the soul of the forest, and they are enraged. Blake answers with a snarl of his own. The dark wolf is standing close enough to me that I can feel his body heat. He's guarding me, I realize, keeping his prey close. If he moved suddenly, he could rip through my flesh. I attempt to edge backward, sharp stones digging into my palms. A twig snaps beneath my boot. Blake's head turns. I recognize the intent too late to do anything about it. Blake leaps on top of me as Callum races across the clearing. The wind is knocked out of my lungs. My pulse thunders as I push Blake's head back, my fingers sinking into black fur. His teeth catch on my cloak, narrowly missing my shoulder, but then the force of the larger wolf knocks him flying. There's a ripping sound as Blake takes part of my cloak with him. I roll onto my front as Blake rolls back onto his feet. Callum is close enough that I could touch him, and every muscle in his body is taut. He snarls. I eye him warily as he glares at Blake with glowing eyes. Blake takes off, part of my cloak between his teeth as he crashes through narrow tree trunks. Callum tears after him, stirring the carpet of wet leaves and skidding through the mud, slowing to a halt as he reaches the edge of the clearing. He growls once more into the darkness, daring Blake to answer back. Then he turns. My heart stills. Get up! My pulse screams. Get up! I force my nerves to calm in the way I would when facing my father or the high priest back at the palace. Whatever hunting instinct Callum has within him, I do not want to provoke it. Callum, I say softly, warily. It's okay. It's me. I don't know whether the male I have come to know is in there. All I know are the stories I have been told of wolves. Stories of monsters who hunt and kill without reason or mercy. They destroy villages and feast on flesh. There are even ghost towns in the Northlands, discovered by our armies, filled with nothing but bones. The wolf standing before me is capable of all of those things, I'm sure. The murals on the walls of the palace show the wolves as scrawny and ghoul-like, with dull fur and frothing mouths and unintelligent feral black eyes. Callum looks nothing like that. He is majestic. The way he carries himself is tall and proud, and his eyes shine with intelligence. He prowls toward me. The moonlight sifts through the branches overhead and reflects off his glossy coat. I edge back, though the river crashes against the rocks close behind. Callum, I whisper, you won't hurt me. And then he is standing over me, close enough that I can feel waves of his body heat. He stares at me, perfectly still. It's like he's trying to tell me something. He lowers his head, sinking into a bow. And I realize what he is telling me. I am safe. He won't hurt me. Relief crashes over me and mingles with a strange, burning curiosity. Tentatively, I raise a hand. When he doesn't move, I touch the side of his face, my trembling fingers sinking into thick fur. He tenses, and I stiffen. The forest seems to hold its breath again. The leaves whisper, "Fall, fall, fall." He nudges my hand with his head, and I exhale, my breath pluming in front of my face. I'm not sure what happens next. Will he let me go back to the castle? I try to push myself to my feet. He nudges me back down. Before I can protest, he lies across my lap. His weight is even greater than Blake's, and his heat sears me through my dress. "Goddess!" I gasp. "Callum, get off me, you big..."